Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So today marks the second anniversary of the horribly tragic Parkland school shooting that took the lives of 17 people. And you know, it's just one of these things that it seems like it was so long ago. I mean, it was just 2 years ago, and it just seems like, at least for me, it just seems like so long ago because, you know, we've had so much go on in that time period. And so much harassment and intimidation. And, oh, by the way, nothing legislatively, nothing to help prevent that again. But that's a whole nother conversation. But here to share some thoughts on the second anniversary of this horrible tragedy, I've asked our good friend Ben Jackson to come talk with us. Ben is a fantastic columnist and a friend of the program. Ben, thanks for taking time for us.
Always glad to be here, Rick, even on such a sad day.
So, you know, I'm looking at this and it's, you know, when I saw it was the second anniversary, I'm going, only the second? It seems like, is it me or does it seem like this was forever ago?
Yeah, you know, I think that that is a function of the Trump administration, where we have, both in gun violence, we have a never-ending series of tragedies that, at least at the federal level, as far as what is fully enacted, nothing happens. Right. And so we see this happen over and over and over again. And so, but in addition to the gun violence problem, we see assault after assault after assault on what it means to be America. Our justice system is under attack. Our poor people are under attack. Women are under attack. And immigrants are under attack. Everything that it means to be American is under assault by this administration. And it is exhausting. And, you know, when we think about it, it's sort of one of those things where the days are really long and the years are really short. And, it's just sort of where we are. So it's been 2 years, and in some ways it feels like yesterday, and in some ways it feels like 20. You know, it's one of those functions of how messed up we are right now.
Yeah, and again, you know, I when I think of these shootings and I think of these tragedies, you know, I think of the responses that, you know, the horrible responses that we get from those on the other side, you know, and especially, you know, with the Sandy Hook shooting and all of the deniers and always a false flag and, you know, all the harassment and intimidation that comes along with it. And I just keep coming to this place of, you know, how did we get to be such a cruel society? Maybe we always were, and I never realized it, but how did we get to this place?
Well, here's what I think is sort of part and parcel with that. And part of it is that the gun lobby, and I want to be very, very clear that I'm not speaking about individual gun owners, but I am speaking about the gun lobby and its ownership on politics is based on fear. And they stoke fear to sell guns. And when you get a group of people who are afraid, and who believe any group of people are trying to take away their rights, which is just simply not the case. But when they believe that, they're going to act in stupid and dangerous ways. And when those people are armed, that becomes deadly, right? And so it's this feedback loop between a group of people who are susceptible to the propaganda of the NRA and the gun lobby, who listen only to right-wing media sources, who you know, are victim to what the Trump administration has done, that has basically taken away the value of truth, where truth doesn't mean anything anymore. And they honestly believe that they are doing something patriotic when they come after this. And it's just this conflagration of terrible things. Combined with the lack of accountability that comes with the availability of anonymous social media, that people who are just bad people can be much louder than they used to be able to be.
It doesn't make it any better, though.
It's horrible.
It's absolutely horrible. And but to highlight your point, I mean, you know, the gun lobby, they've really created this environment because there have been opportunities over the years for there to be some middle ground that, you know, some common sense solutions that could help that they've been completely against. And they've pushed this narrative of, You know, the slippery slope. If we allow one little thing, you know, it's all over. The brown shirts are going to come knocking on your door and stealing your guns, which nobody, literally nobody, even the most extreme gun nuts are not calling for.
No, nobody's calling for it. And, you know, when we, last September, I went with Fred Guttenberg, whose daughter was killed in Parkland, and my friend Alyssa Milano to meet with Ted Cruz about the issue of gun violence. And, you know, we talked about this idea of slippery slope and that people were trying to confiscate guns and this lie that people are perpetrating about us, and Cruz being part of that. And, you know, I remember sitting across from Fred, and he looked at Ted Cruz and said, "Can you pass a background check?" And Ted Cruz said, "Yes." And he said, "Do you beat your wife?" And he said, "No." They said, "Then nobody's trying to take your guns." And that is the absolute truth of it. But if they allow that truth to persist, their whole argument for allowing everybody who wants any gun to have it whenever they want goes away. The slippery slope argument, which is such a load of crap, just disappears. And they can't allow that to happen. So instead, they engage in professional gaslighting, and they do it really, really well.
Yeah, for me, one of the things that you know I've said is technologically we can solve some of these school shootings pretty simply. You know, I know there's technology out there, fingerprint technology for trigger locks and the such, that you could easily pass a law saying, look, you know, all guns beyond this point will have to have this technology. So that only the people who are authorized to handle this firearm can do it. We have that technology, and yet that can't even get through. And to me, that's of the most common sense solution possible. It's like giving you a set of keys for this deadly instrument and saying, look, it isn't even a hard thing. You put it up, your fingerprint's right in it. It just seems like we can't even get something as common sense as that passed through.
It should not be harder to open your iPhone than it is to fire your gun. Right, that everyone has an iPhone. That iPhone has either face recognition technology or fingerprint technology, and you put your finger on it, your iPhone opens in less than a second. It is a fundamental fact of technology that already exists. And the gun industry is actively not creating those guns, those smart guns, those safe guns, because they are afraid of the impact on the rest of the guns in America. It's stupid because they could just make those same guns with that technology. But again, they worry about their profits more than the 80,000 lives that have been lost to gun violence since Parkland and the additional somewhere in the area of 150,000 lives that have been forever altered by being injured or wounded in gun violence in that same period of time.
See, because for me, you know, if I'm looking at this, if I were one of the lobbyists, I would see an opportunity to increase sales by having, you know, maybe even a gun buyback program. Say, hey, give us your old guns and we'll sell you these brand new ones with this great new, you know, with this new technology. And who knows, you know, maybe a bottle opener and a soda koozie or something.
I mean, that business model exists. Car dealers do it, right? This is exactly what car dealers
do.
It's the exact same thing. Textbook publishers, right? You get a fourth edition textbook or a fifth edition textbook, and the difference is the price tag, right? That's it. And it's they could do this with guns really easily. But I'm glad you actually mentioned the business value of it, because there is something that just happened yesterday here in Boston, where a group called Change the Ref, which is led by Manuel and Patricia Oliver, who lost their son Joaquin in Parkland, started this idea of gun safety certified businesses, where businesses do three pretty simple things. They ask their customers not to bring guns into their stores. They ask them to not give money to NRA-backed candidates, and they ask them to support gun violence prevention efforts in their community. And they become gun violence certified businesses. And it's this little branding idea, marketing that people can use to, you know, if I'm in my own town and I have the option between three sporting goods stores and one of them is gun violence certified, I can choose to shop there. And, you know, using the market and the idea of profit in the same way that the gun industry does, gives us the power to reduce their financial impact and their financial, the amount of money that they have available to spend on our political system and influence this complete lack of
I mean, that sounds like an interesting idea. How's it going? I mean, that sounds like a lot of legwork. How's that working out?
Legwork. Well, you know what? It's brand new, but there have been dozens of businesses that have signed up. Really big name businesses are part of it, like Dick's Sporting Goods. There's a website, businessmustact.org, where businesses are actually given a scorecard on their gun violence prevention efforts, and businesses can sign up to get this mark. Now, the mark was just announced yesterday. We did this here in Boston with our Attorney General, Maura Healey, and Manny and Patricia Oliver, and the Stop Handgun Violence Coalition here in Massachusetts, where we have some of these very common sense gun laws. And we have one of the lowest gun death rates in the country, despite the fact that we have, you know, a really big urban population here in the state, which is sort of the argument that the other side makes, is that, oh, you know, these big cities, they have these laws and it doesn't work. Well, we have that here in Massachusetts. Boston is a very big city with a very big population, sort of part of the East Coast megalopolis, and we still have a very, very low gun rate because we have these common sense gun laws. And, you know, I live in a small town that is 15 miles west of Boston, and we have several places here in town where you can go and buy a gun, and nobody's getting shot because we have these very basic laws. And having businesses participate in that and use that as a marketing tool is such an interesting and important idea. And it is a new idea, so, you know, I can't tell you exactly where that will shake out, but I do believe that is something that can be effective.
It'll be interesting to see how this works out.
Yeah.
You know, last thoughts on this horrible, tragic day before I move on to something else?
Sure. You know, I just think that we need to feel the stories of these people, that you know, if we take just a few minutes and hear the impact on the lives of the people who have been through it. And it's, Parkland is 2 years, but in those 2 years, it's 80,000 more people. And whether it's in schools or it's in suicide or in sort of random shootings, in accidents, these happen across the country, across economic and social differences. They happen everywhere in America, and everybody is impacted by them. And if you hear those stories a little bit, it's really, really hard to listen to the pain that is caused and then change and then ignore it, not say, I'm not going to do anything about it. So I just encourage everybody to listen to these stories and think, how is this something that could possibly be intended by the Second Amendment?
Good point. The other reason I wanted to talk to you today is, you know, yesterday we saw General Kelly come out and say that Alexander Vindman followed protocol, and you're one of the people that I look to for military stuff. You've served in the military. You're an advocate there. I'm curious your thoughts on Kelly's statement.
Sure. So General Kelly came out yesterday and said something that is very, very true. He said that when you are given an order as a member of the military, you are required to determine whether that is what is called a lawful order or an unlawful order. A lawful order is almost everything. It fits inside both the Constitution and the Uniform Code of Military Justice. And it could be anything from get down and give me 20 to charge that hill, we're taking out that machine gun nest. But what it can't be is violate the Constitution to engage in political machinations for the commander-in-chief. It can't be commit murder. It can't be a lot of other things. And so he said that when you are given this order, your job is to determine whether it's lawful or unlawful. And if you're given an unlawful order, to tell the person who gave it to you that it is an unlawful order, and to go to your boss or their boss and say, hey, this is a problem. And I will tell you that they teach you that from day one. I was an enlisted man in the Navy, and I went to boot camp. And they tell you that from the very, very first day you get there, and they hammer it into you through the entire thing. It is a fundamental part of being in the military, is being able to determine whether what you're being told to do is legal or not. And so when he comes out and says this, it, anyone who's been in the military is going to be like, oh, yeah, of course, that's true. Donald Trump has never served, and he pointedly never served, and he pointedly doesn't give a damn about what is a lawful or unlawful order. And he's certainly triggered by this, but what he said is very, very accurate and will ring true to anybody who has ever worn the uniform.
Yeah, because I look at this and, you know, and I've heard that from every person who I've ever known who's been in the military. I never was. So I defer to people who have been to tell me this is how things are. So when I saw Kelly say this, I go, yeah, this is backed up by virtually every person I've ever met who's talked about any of these type of issues. Or, to highlight your point, they can give you an order to dig a hole. They just can't order you to dig a hole and put a body in there of somebody that Trump shot on Fifth Avenue.
Exactly.
That's the difference. And this is basically, you know, what I see Trump having done. And today you have the Army coming out and saying there's not going to be no investigation into Vindman because there's nothing there. He did right. What he was supposed to do. So that at least gave me a little hope that, you know, all of our institutions aren't poisoned by Trump in the White House.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, with the military, the thing that gives me a little bit of hope is the people who are the admirals and the generals in charge of the military right now are the people who came out of the academies around the time of the first Gulf War and during the Clinton administration. So these are not people, you know, the Trump people in the military are in their first 3 years in the military. They are not primarily in the senior leadership. And everyone who's come up through the ranks of the military has had that training and has had, whether or not you've agreed with the actions of the Bush administration or the Clinton administration or the Obama administration in the way that they use the military, I think that all of them have existed in a realm of normalcy between this idea of lawful and unlawful order and the appropriate use of the military versus the personal use of the military, which is what Trump wants. And so the people who are in command of the military will have come up in that position. And I highly doubt that any one of them would follow through on some of the absolutely inane things that Trump is suggesting and doesn't even have the courage to come out and say. You know, he could never come out and say, I want Vindman out, I want him court-martialed, I want him locked up in Leavenworth. What he said is, we're going to send him back to the Department of Defense and they can do whatever they want. So he's implying, but he doesn't even have the courage of his convictions to say what he means. And the military is just not going to go along with it. I have perhaps more faith in the military than in any other part of the executive right now.
I hope you're right. The last thing I want to talk to you about, I don't know if you saw this. I know you saw this story because you wrote a piece on it for the Globe, I believe, there in Boston.
Right.
Evidently, we're making landmines great again.
Yeah. It's hard to get your head around this one. So in 1997, the rest of the world basically signed a treaty that banned the use of landmines. And there's really good reason for this, that landmines are indiscriminate in their targeting, right? That when you are pointing a gun at somebody, you are discriminating at who you're firing. Now, there's the question of whether you hit what you're aiming at or whatnot, but at least you're trying. Landmine is just going to blow up when somebody steps on it. It doesn't know if it's an animal. It doesn't know if it's a child. If it doesn't know if it's a friendly, American soldier walking across it. It doesn't know. It just knows that it's been stepped on and it explodes. And so the rest of the world said, this is pretty terrible. Of the 195 countries in the world, there have been about 165 of those countries.
Of which we are not one.
Treaty. Of which we are not one. Russia is not one. But, you know, Afghanistan and Iraq and Yemen and Ukraine and some of these horribly war-torn countries who live in this world have signed it. You know, the reason that we didn't sign it ostensibly was for the Korean Peninsula. And so the Obama administration basically said that we're going to abide by this treaty, the 97 treaty, everywhere else in the world except the Korean Peninsula. And the Trump administration came out a couple of weeks ago under the cover of their own impeachment and said, we're just going to roll that back. We're going to give commanders the right to use landmines wherever they want. And let me tell you, every year there are at least about 8,000 people who are killed by landmines, and most of those are civilians, and a lot of them are children. And there is absolutely no reason for us to be using these weapons. There's just not. We have such a technological superiority against any enemy that we face in the field that there's no reason for us to use this. We could use drones or machine guns or smart bombs or just about anything else to achieve the same effect without having to resort to these vile, evil, deadly weapons.
Yeah, but here's the thing. When I read that story, my mind immediately went to, well, Trump can't build his big, beautiful wall. and we're just going to litter the southern border with landmines. Right. I may be wrong, but you know, and my mind may have gone in a horrible direction. But this is the world we now live in.
Well, I just, you know, when I hear that, I think, can any of us name any situation where Trump, given a range of options, hasn't chosen the worst possible thing to do? And the answer is no. He's always chosen the thing where we're like, even Trump couldn't do that. And he's like, yeah, let's lock up the kids, right?
Right.
Let's
hold my beer.
Right. He tries to make sure that we level up the horrible things that we do. And there's no reason to not think that he wouldn't want to landmine the border. I mean, right now he's blowing up Native American burial grounds in the Southwest to put his wall up, right? Like, there's nothing that is sacred to him, especially the lives of people from South and Central America who are trying to cross our border.
And the thing that bothers me is that, you know, we're spending all this money on a wall that, you know, we now know can be thwarted with a $100 reciprocating saw.
Right. It just doesn't work, right? It's like I've never heard of a ladder. And it so clearly doesn't do the thing they said it was going to do. The thing they said it was going to do, we don't really want it to do in the first place. And it's just this fantastic waste. It's a monument to hate and xenophobia, which is how Trump gets elected.
Yeah.
And so that's why he does it. You know, they don't really care if it works. They care if it's there.
Yeah. But, you know, I read this story on these landmines, and they quoted a UN number that evidently they have destroyed since 1997, you know, the stockpiles of some 40 million of these landmines.
Right.
And I'm
right.
going, that's just a number of these things that I can't even fathom. Where would you put 40 million of these freaking landmines and not have people who weren't involved in conflict killed by it?
Yeah, there's no way to do it. I mean, that's exactly what it is. You know, you can look at... there are very few places in the world that haven't been touched by war in the last century. And you can look at any place where that has happened, where battles have happened on that soil, and there are landmines there. And it's in Africa, it's in Asia, it's in Europe. And, you know, we don't think an awful lot about it because we've been really lucky in that our wars have been elsewhere.
Yeah.
But they are all over the world, and the poorest, most vulnerable people in the world are the people who are suffering from this, and we are not seeing any gain from it. It's not even like that suffering gets us anything.
No,
it just is, and we have to be better than that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Ben, I appreciate the time and the thoughts. Keep up the great work. I look forward to talking to you again.
Thanks, Rick. Anytime.
Good stuff. Our good friend Ben Jackson. It's just amazing. Amazing that we're even talking about landmines. And like I said the other day, there was the guy I met who was, I forget, he was some officer in the British military, but he was working with the UN to dig these things up. This is a guy who he and his team were literally crawling around fields, digging these things up. I mean, and he was talking about, you know, how difficult it was and, you know, how people were injured and, you know, how many people were killed. And we're gonna go back to this. Oh, 263 more days till election day. Mark the calendar. This guy's got to go. That simple. Quick break. Right back.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.